and welcome into On the Preds with me, your host, Alex Darty of AZ Sports, and Sean Smith of On the Forecheck. Sean is here, and I am here too, despite the Predators being swept out of the playoffs for the first time in franchise history, 4-0 in terms of games to the Colorado Avalanche. And so the offseason begins. Sean,
Preds got swept. I'm just going to say this, and like, you know, I enjoy watching the Preds play, and now that it's over, I've always enjoyed watching the Avalanche play as well, and I just want to say, number one, just a big congratulations to that franchise and that team for finding a way to beat the odds and to come right with a series victory against
despite
the Predators.
The odds.
Despite all the odds. And I'll say, you know, I know coming into that series, Colorado was like, people were just so down on Colorado. Like, there's no way they're going to win. Like, it's impossible. The Predators team is just too good. They can't overcome the power of the Predators. But I'm going to say, you know, they did it. They managed not just to win a game, but they managed to win four in a row. And in a commanding fashion, too. So, you know, just no one thought they could do it. No one.
You know, a lot of people talk about heroes and heroes rise through adversity, right?
That's right.
And, I think the Colorado Avalanche are full of true heroes, true American heroes, and some heroes.
They've been forged in fire.
Yep. Yeah. Very, very happy to see that they were able to do that. I honestly think the Avalanche, I think that they probably win the cup. That's just my initial thought. Because here's one reason why, and we'll talk about the series briefly here at the beginning. You really don't see like domination from start to finish in a series like that anymore. That just does not happen. Series sweeps happen, but for one team to own the lead in each game for like almost the entire series, and the Preds owned a lead for what, like 3 minutes in the game
maybe.
Four?
Yeah, somewhere a little below or a little above three.
Yeah.
Not much.
And like, you do not see that. You do not see a team go through that. Now, obviously, the Predators had one of the reasons is because they lost their best goaltender. But I still think that the Avalanche are like, they're the best team in the West. And so they're going to be in the Stanley Cup final. And if I'm looking at the Eastern Conference right now, based on where things have gone, I mean, we've got a couple more game sevens, I think, tonight. And then I don't know, is Tampa the best team? I guess Tampa's probably the best team, but I don't know. I feel like Florida's the best team. Yeah, I think Avalanche are going to beat Florida.
See, I was pretty all in at the beginning of the playoffs, and even toward the end of the season on the Panthers being the team to beat. Really surprised to see them struggle as much as they had in the playoffs.
Yeah,
already. Really kind of made me say, you know, look, I've always said the Avalanche are nasty and they're very dangerous. But their domination of the Predators combined with Florida's, you know, inability to close it out early, kind of makes me think that the Avalanche are probably the team to beat now. And Tampa Bay, you know, they're making some noise, but they've kind of had to struggle to get past the Leafs, and that's kind of surprising to me as well. So, you know, in my opinion, which as we all know is worth nothing, I feel like the Avalanche have the best chance to go. So,
yeah, the Avalanche would have to get through the Blues and either the Oilers or Flames. Battle of Alberta, that is going to be fun to watch.
Yeah,
that's going to be fun. Okay, so we are not going to break down all four games, all four miserable games of that series. I want to briefly touch on game four just a little bit, because that was probably the best game the Preds played, I guess, out of the four series. They were outscored 21-9, so there's not a lot of good. And then after that, there has been a lot of talk this week about John Hines and about David Poile and where the fan base is at with those two. So there's really a lot to break down in terms of where the team goes from here. There's so many things that are going to happen over the next few weeks. And then, we'll touch on some key dates over the summer, including the draft and free agency when those happen. But before we do any of that, we've got to talk about Brymack Mechanical.
Oh.
Sean, it's going to start getting hot in Middle Tennessee before you know it. In fact, you probably already noticed it. It got pretty hot over the last few days. So if you need to get your AC or your ductwork looked at, or you just want to improve the air quality in your home, talk to the folks at Brymack Mechanical. They have three locations in Middle Tennessee and Kentucky. Their main hub is in Clarksville, commercial and residential HVAC. Ductwork to improve air quality. They are a family-owned business. Satisfaction guaranteed on all of your HVAC needs. Brymackandassociates.com is the website, or call them 931-572-5742. Brymack Mechanical, check them out. You're going to want to get ahead of that stuff with your air conditioning, because you do not want to be stuck without air conditioning in Nashville, Tennessee over the next, 4 months. The long summer that is Middle Tennessee summer. Check them out. Brymack Mechanical. Okay. All right. Let me go back for just a second to the actual game. Game four on Monday. So if I remember correctly, the Predators were tied 2-2 at the end of second, right? Jakob Trenin had two goals, right?
Yeah, he did.
Jakob Trenin played great. I think Jakob Trenin played great in the series. He was tenacious. He was all over the place.
He's played that way all season. I think you just really saw it shine. You know, and honestly, if you look at the situations where he's shown, to be really proficient, it's going to be on the penalty kill and on the forecheck. And spent a lot of time on those two things.
Jakob Trenin and Matt Duchene, the only two players to score more than one goal in the series. They each scored three. They were both very good. Yeah.
Oh, what else that's, you can that's say where about he him. Shined all season long. And you take this series, and the Preds spent most of it on the penalty kill or on the forecheck trying to get the puck back. So it makes sense to me that Trenin would have a big game or have a big series in that scenario.
Yeah. So it's tied 2-2. And then in the third period, the Predators come out pretty strong and then get a very nice-looking goal from Philip Forsberg. And for the first time in the series, they have a lead in a game. They lead 3-2, and it lasted for not quite 5 minutes. So Forsberg scores 3-2. Bridgestone Arena is loud. And honestly, even despite the domination in the series to that point, I was like, the Predators are going to win this game. I felt like this is where the balance of talent and the very small margins that are usually present in the NHL, we're going to come out here, because you just don't see sweeps that often. And you see teams fighting so hard to get back into a series and to at least just win a game and move on to the next game. I just felt like this was going to be the moment. And then there was an infamous play where Matt Duchene got high-sticked. Pretty bad, actually. And he drew blood, too. Would have been a four-minute minor if they had called it. And then Devin Toews comes down and scores to tie it up. So that was about 5 minutes later. And then after that, Valeri Nichushkin, that was 4 minutes later, 3 minutes later, puts Colorado on top 4-3. And then I was like, oh no, the Avalanche are definitely going to win this game now, because the Predators could not, I mean, they were not skilled enough. They were not ready enough to pour it on at the end of that game to try to go tie it up. And then Avs get an empty netter and season over.
I think what's hard is, you know, you made the comment that you really felt that, like you said, those slim margins, right? The discrepancies between teams are fairly small most of the time, that it was all going to come together. But like you said, when you saw, I'll say this, I was in the arena as a fan, and I was sitting behind that play, the high stick, the missed high stick. I saw him get high stick, everybody in the crowd, hands are up, like, come on, you know, call something. And to see, I mean, it wasn't just that that happened and it got ignored and play went on and there was a stoppage. It was just that it happened en route to a goal. And it was at that moment when you have the collective outrage of the entirety of Bridgestone Arena, as well as the team, and you can see that nothing's going, like 17,000 and however many people screaming and the players getting upset and John Hines being furious isn't going to shift the tide of how the officials feel or whether or not they can go back and call it. You kind of realize, all right, so that just happened. The Predators completely had a, you know, there's a blown call and basically got screwed over here, and it led to a goal, but not just any goal, a goal that ends up putting the team in the lead. That was kind of the moment where, like you said, you go from the Predators are going to come out and win this game to, nope, this series is over.
And the series probably would not have gone more than five. I mean, the Predators trying to go back to Colorado Wednesday to play. Now, who knows? Maybe UC Soros comes back for that game five. That would have been pretty incredible. But, it wouldn't have made a difference. It just would have not been a sweep. Something that I think is important, by the way. I mean, I think getting swept is not nothing. I mean, you remember that.
Yeah.
As much as Preds fans remember sweeping the Blackhawks, you will remember when the Preds got swept by the Avalanche. It will be burned in your memory.
Yeah, and especially, Alex, because the Predators were heavily favored to win the series. No one picked the Avalanche. No one.
Right. I think, I suppose we should go ahead and jump into Hines and Poile, that sort of whole discussion. And then we'll save the off season, including the Forsberg stuff for the second ad. But anyways, so, there's been a ton of discussion in the Preds fan world and the Preds Twitter world about Hines and Poile.
Mm.
So I published, let's back up for a second. Adam Vingan of the Athletic published literally the day that right as the teams were shaking hands on the ice while we were in the tunnel waiting for the players to come out after the game. He'd already had it written. Had published an article that basically said it is time. It's the Preds ownership can no longer be silent about David Poile. I thought it was well deserved. It was a well timed and good article from him, because I thought it really struck where the conflict really is, because it's not that David Poile. It's not a matter of David Poile choosing to, you know. The only people that can actually make anything happen are the ownership, right?
Right.
So that happens. And then I had been working on a piece that I published the next day where I basically just think it's time for the David Poile era to end. I do like John Hines as a coach. I really do. I think he's actually pretty good. I think he could be great. I honestly do, because of the mentality that he has, what kind of a coach he is, how does he approach coaching professional athletes. His system, I think, is fine. I don't think there's anything wrong with his system at all. I think it relies on a lot of his individual parts to work as individual parts. I think he's got a good thing going with his assistant coaches. Wouldn't be surprised if there's some changes there, by the way, but I would imagine most of them return. I think Dan Lambert, I think his contract is up. I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone.
Mm.
But all that's to say, I think that the David Poile era has reached a time when it needs to end. And I'm not sure if you feel the same way. I wrote about it. Please go read what I wrote at azsports.com. You can also check me on Twitter. It's my pinned tweet. You can check it out there. I really feel like it's not just about the sweep. It has to do with the sweep. It has to do with probably now they're going to lose Forsberg, because we saw him skate around the ice. You tweeted that out, the Forsberg solemn goodbye kind of thing.
Yeah.
Look, there's a lot on the ledger here that shows David Poile's not put the team in a great position right now, and not really maximized the the use of the talent, the use of the cap money, the use of the draft capital, all that stuff has been pretty poor over the last few years. But I'm interested to hear your take.
I think I'll say this, and let me give my reasoning before I give you my answer. How's that sound? I don't know.
Good.
I'm not going to give you my thesis, but I'm going to give you the evidence. It's probably a bad way to write a paper. But here's the thing. If I look at the end of the season, you know, your article talked about the ledger and being in the red versus being in the black, or credits and debits and all that, which I thought was a good way to look at it. The biggest, if you really want to look at numbers, I think the biggest number coming out of the season that I would have to point to would be the $10 million of unused cap space that the Predators finished with at the end of the season. That is not on anyone in the organization except for David Poile.
Yeah.
And when you look at how other teams were able to go out and get some players that were good players, maybe not, you know, all-stars, but very good players on teams that were struggling, and pry them away from those teams in exchange for some magic beans. I really think, you know, some of those guys are being difference makers in the playoffs too. And I think that when you look at the fact that there was all of this cap space, and not that cap space comes into play super, super big by the trade deadline. A lot of it has more to do with, you know, do you really want to get rid of somebody or draft picks? But some of these guys were had for fairly low prices. And to not really make a move beyond getting Jeremy Lauzon, it just didn't say, you know, when you say, like, I like this team, what it sounds like to me is that you're not very confident in this team, and you're not willing to invest in this team, and you're not willing to say, we're going to get into the playoffs this season. Let's make a solid run through this, and let's make some noise and bring in some dogs. You know what I mean? Bring in some guys that can get the job done. Yeah. So
I'm really glad you brought up. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just, for me, you know, you look at that and you know, we're talking about, you know, we didn't want to trade anybody. We didn't want to give anything up, but you're going to continue to put Cunning out there, Nick Cousins out there, guys that are with the team, have been with the team, have not been huge difference makers for the team, that don't shift the needle very far in the positive direction. It just seems like there was a lot more that could have been done at the trade deadline to try to make some things happen. And it's not just this season. You look back, and that's where your article comes into play. You look back at the more recent history of transactions, and I think you're going to see a lot of debits and not credits. And
yeah, I think that the slope is going down. I mean, the slope has been going down for a very long time. I mean, for 5 years now, the trend is not a good one. I mean, like now you're getting to where even in the playoff series, like at least they won a couple games against Carolina last year. Right. They didn't even do that this year. And all right, I'm really glad you brought up the spinning to the cap thing, because I think that's a great point. I think Chris Mason went on some radio show recently and talked about that as a. Here's my only disagreement with Mason on that point. Basically, Mason said the Predators were one of like 10 teams to not spend to the cap, and he's right. It's like basically 9 or 10 teams, depending on how you qualify that. And out of those 10 teams, the Predators were by far the better team. Like they had most results. They made the playoffs. The other teams that didn't do that were Buffalo, Anaheim, Detroit, Columbus, Ottawa, Seattle, New Jersey, Arizona, San Jose. That's pretty much it. Like none of those teams made the playoffs. Philadelphia, I think, spent to the cap and they were out. But here's the problem. The Predators didn't spend to the cap and were the better team. But I don't think that's necessary. That's not the flex on your GM that you think it is. Why didn't you spend to the cap? I think that's a credit. That's a credit to John Hines right there.
Yeah, it is.
Like that right there shows John Hines is making a lot out of what he's got. Right? I mean, out of what he's been given. To me, that shows that David Poile has. I think in some ways he's been burned by his use of money in the past, and so he's just hands off and he's just being careful. And at that point, I think as a tentative GM, he's no longer going for it. And this is what I talked about. He's not setting any trends in the NHL anymore. He's following them. He's chasing talent rather than drafting it and developing it. And mm-hmm. that shows me a GM that has kind of lost touch on what's actually happening. I mean, I don't think you could say all you want about, you know, well, the team should tank for a while and get really high draft picks. I think it's very clear the Predators never want to do that. They don't want to be the tank team. They and frankly, I don't know that they can. I don't think they want to go to a situation where for 5 years they need to be pretty bad and stock up draft capital, because they know that they will lose some ticket revenue. They will lose some fan base revenue in that scenario. Not all of it, but they will lose some shine off of the fan base in terms of a lot of the hardcore fans are gonna, well, the hardcore fans are gonna stay. A lot of the casual fans are gonna not be interested. Mm-hmm. You know, season ticket sales are gonna be tough at that point. As in terms of, commit to 3 years of awful hockey, please.
At these prices, in this economy.
At these prices in this economy, right? So I'm really glad you brought that up. That's a really good point. The Predators did not spend to the cap. They had $10 million extra to spend. They didn't do that. Could they have spent that on a scoring winger to give them some depth in the playoffs? I mean, I'm not going to go through all the examples, but I'm sure they could have found someone that could have provided some extra kick on the offensive side of the game in those games where they could not get anything going. Or someone that could prevent them from not blowing the game against Arizona.
Yeah.
And, you know, a better backup goalie other than David Riddick. You know, there's several different options here, but that's a really great point from you. I'm glad you brought that up. And I think it shows David Poile has lost touch with what's going on with this team. And I think it also shows that John Hines is a good coach. Now, the problem is if Poile is gone, or if you're calling for the end of David Poile, you're probably also the collateral damage is John Hines is probably gone, right?
I would assume so.
That would be unfortunate to me. And I know that that's kind of a strange take to have, that I would actually want John Hines to stick around. Most of that is because this team needs continuity in the locker room. Like right. They need a consistent voice at this point. If they get rid of the GM and they get rid of the coach and have a brand new coach come in here, even if it's someone like Barry Trotz, who they know, that's basically a brand new locker room for him. Yeah. And there's like two guys, maybe only one, that's still still around. It would be Ekholm, I think. Ekholm and Josi, sorry.
Did Forsberg get any time with Trotz?
So Forsberg came and played one game, and then he went down. I'm trying to remember. 14, did he play in 13-14? I think he played like a few games in 13-14. Doesn't matter. So say three, and also we don't know if Forsberg's coming back. But so anyways, I think that's where I'm at with all that. I hope that I hope people don't take my take as too like sky is falling. I really don't think that. I mean, I think that this team could be competitive next year if they just make some very important decisions, if they make the right decisions. I think they could be just fine. They've got tons of talent. I mean, you give Tomasino a full year in the NHL. He's going to be better now. Cody Glass, I think, is going to be on the opening day roster next year and probably stick around.
Yeah.
Tolvanen, I don't know. Tolvanen is a black box to me. I don't know what happened with him. I have no answers.
I don't either, but I do want to say this before we move on about that cap space, because
– Go ahead. Yeah, go for it.
I think what's hard for me about the cap space is, you know, you've got to remember – not you, Alex. I know you know this, but – I mean, just as a fan in general, you should be aware that the Predators spent the entire season with $10 million in space, meaning they started the season with it. And I'm, you know, what it's a $10 million hole in the lineup is what it is, if you want to look at it. And I'm not saying, well, you could go out and get a $10 million player, but obviously they were trying to save that space for something. For someone, and I'm going to say that it was probably Taylor Hall. And I think if you look at the Taylor Hall situation, it was known that David Poile wanted Taylor Hall. And it was known that he decided to not sign with the Predators because he ended up signing with the Bruins to a longer contract. that would have reunited Taylor Hall with his old coach, whom he really seemed to like and said a lot of good things about. But it doesn't seem like Nashville was a big enough draw for him to make that happen. And so, and this is all speculation on my part, obviously. I don't know anything, you know, behind the scenes. But when you have that situation, it really makes you think, okay, so if Poile was able to draw Duchesne, but then not turn around, you know, a season or two later and draw another big name, that's a problem. But even beyond that, to take that $10 million in cap space that you know you have and will have next season, plus more because of some other changes, we know that the Forsberg issue, because they keep saying it's the money. It's not the clauses. It's not the term, but it's the money. And it's supposed to be somewhere in the neighborhood of $9 million. You know you have $6 million committed to Forsberg already. So it would only be a net change of $3 million per season.
Well,
you've got $10 million.
The net change, but like, you know, yeah, it gets trickier when you think about the fact that they have other money coming off and everything. But yeah, yes, in terms of the increase of how much you're paying him, right, it's not that much.
But you've already clearly not picked up somebody you were planning on picking up who would have been an impact player. Go ahead and say, you know what, that's a $10 million mistake or a $10 million hole in the roster. Let's go ahead and spend $3 million more and shore it up a little bit. If it's really just money.
I think we should spend more. We're going to talk more about Forsberg. I think we're going to save that for another. Okay. I mean, not that it was, I mean, it's relevant to bring up. I mean, I think it makes sense to talk a lot about Forsberg. I think we should do a whole show on that, because I think that there's definitely a lot of room to talk about what happened with Forsberg and also what happened in the post game locker room closeout, whatever the last availability of the year. Some interesting comments. I think there's some interesting things from him, from other players talking about his situation too. So that was really interesting. So there's a lot to talk about with Forsberg. And the other thing is, like, we're just not going to know anything until it's announced that there's a contract, or it's announced on Forsberg's Instagram. Thank you, Nashville. I really loved it here. I'm going to move on. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that, right? I mean,
no.
Or something in the Players Tribune. He comes out with he writes some article. Thank you, Nashville. You're my home. Now I'm going to go to L.A.
Oh.
So we'll talk plenty about Forsberg coming up probably next week's show. I mean, why not? You know, let's go ahead and start diving into
it. Rip the Band-Aid off.
We're actually going to talk about, at the end of the show, I'm going to briefly catch everybody up on our format for the summer, because, you know, it's off season, it's summer. It's going to be a little different, but not that much different. Don't be too worried. It's going to be basically, you're still going to hear from us. And we'll catch everybody up on that. I do want to go over this Twitter poll. So I put out a Twitter poll on, let's see, May 12th. I think it was Thursday. And the caption was, which of these forwards would you be most surprised to see on next year's Preds team? So there are four forwards here. Forsberg, Cousins, Phil Forsberg, Nick Cousins, Luke Cunningham, and Jakob Trenin. Those are the four expiring UFAs. I'm sorry, expiring contracts. Cunningham's an RFA. Cousins a UFA. Obviously, Forsberg's UFA. Trenin is a RFA. So I will tell you, the results of that poll, what people think is the most likely player of that list to be gone, after I talk about HelloFresh.
Ooh.
So HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. It's all about convenience with HelloFresh. Not only do the ingredients come pre-proportioned, so you're not overbuying or wasting food, it's easier than ever to get filling meals on the table in a snap. With options like family-friendly or quick and easy recipes, we got our three meals yesterday. Conveniently in a box on our front step. All I had to do is bring it inside, put it in the fridge, put our menu cards by the stove where we always put them. We got some pasta primavera this week. We got a Greek bowl thing. I'd start to explain. It's like all the things that would be in a Greek pita sandwich in a bowl instead.
That sounds really good.
It's very
good. Greek flavors.
We've had it before. It's very good. But you can customize your favorite dishes as well. Swap out a protein for another one, or add a protein to a veggie meal if you want to do that. That means more choices, more variety, more meals truly tailored to you. Pick your favorites from 50 different weekly options. Skip weeks if you need to. Change your delivery date if you need to. Update your preferences all in the HelloFresh app. It's really, really great. We love it. HelloFresh.com/Pred16 and use code Pred16 to get up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Again, HelloFresh.com/Pred16 to get 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Go check it out. HelloFresh. All right. So the results of the Twitter poll. You ready?
Yeah. I remember voting in it.
Well, who'd you vote for?
No, I want to hear what the, I want to hear the results.
No, tell first. Me. You got to tell me who you voted for first.
I voted for Nick Cousins.
Okay. The least. So coming in fourth place, 2.4% of the vote. Again, this means this person is probably the most likely in the fans' eyes to return next year. The player that everyone thinks is this guy's a lock to return to the Predators next year is Jakob Trenin. Everyone knows, everyone thinks he's going to return, and I agree with him. I think Jakob Trenin is 100% going to be back on this Preds team. The third place actually, 16%, Philip Forsberg. So people are a little bit more confident that Philip Forsberg is going to resign than you would think, than I would have thought. Some when optimism. I put this poll out, I kind of thought Forsberg would be second.
Hmm.
And the person that came in first place is who came in that I, is also who I thought would come in first place.
Mm-hmm.
In second place is Luke Cunning, 26.5% of the vote. And then first place, the player that most likely is not going to be on the team next year and that everyone knows it is Nick Cousins, 54.8% of the vote. Mm. So long, Nick Cousins. Your time in Nashville it existed. There were some pretty interesting moments. He had some interesting moments, but have fun wherever you're going to go.
You're
probably not going to be here.
Well, you know, I think what's more frustrating, though, you know, about that poll in general is that, yeah, Cousins is probably gone. And I'd say the reason for that is less to do with performance and more to do with just the fact that you can get that just about from anybody.
Yeah, I mean, he would be paid.
Placement level.
He would probably get like $3 million and they can get probably two different players in their own organization to produce the same kind of stuff for much less than $3 million.
Yeah. And I think that's the reality of it. You know, they're probably going to bring Cunning back with the amount of confidence that was shown in him and given to him by John Hines. It's either, you know, the organization is really very highly invested in Luke Cunning as a member of the team for a long time, which I don't think everyone's going to be excited about when they announce some kind of extension or contract. It's going to be too much or for too long, and a lot of people are going to look at recent results to say bad things about it. Or it's just that he has some kind of, I don't know, photographs or dirt on John Hines, and he's using it as blackmail.
I think Luke Cunning probably will be back. You're right. I also think that I wouldn't be surprised if his contract is pretty reasonable. He signed a $2.3 million contract. He was at a $2.3 million AAV and had a bad year. I think he's probably going to be looking at around $2 million. If he, you know, he's an RFA, remember, so like he might even go to arbitration. I don't know. If he goes to arbitration, that would probably be bad for him because he's probably not going to like the results of that.
No.
So maybe he just gets out ahead of it and signs like a cheap team friendly contract. But the issue is like, I don't understand where he would fit in this lineup. I mean, it seems like he doesn't do really anything particularly well. He's just like okay at defense. He takes bad penalties. He's like, he shoots a lot, but he's not a particularly good shooter. He's not a playmaker. He doesn't play on the power play. At least he shouldn't. Like, I just don't know what Luke Cunningham does well other than like just be really, really aggressive all the time and put the team on the penalty kill. So, yeah.
I feel like he had a better season last season that kind of gave some expectation that he was on an upward trend, especially being younger. But that wasn't the result. And, you know, I'm gonna say this because I don't know how much time we'll spend in the future talking about Luke Cunningham, but I do want to say this.
Yeah, get your Luke Cunningham takes in right now because
I'm going to get them in right now while they're hot, while they're spicy, while they're relevant, because I'm not sure they will be in the future. But here's the thing. What was interesting was that we saw John Hines continue to start Luke Cousins and Luke Cousins. Good God.
Luke Cousins.
That'd be an experience right there.
Nick Cunningham, Luke Cousins. I could forget several years from now, I could probably think back on this whole series of games with them and be like, yeah, might as well have been the same player. I mean, they were pretty ineffective.
I don't know. I think Cousins was a little more effective at drawing penalties, but
that's true.
You know, but that's not necessarily a reason to keep somebody around. But here's what I'll say about Luke Cunningham after playing in every single game this season when John Hines was finally asked, you know, what's the deal? All of the reasons he gave for continuing to play Cunningham night in and night out and to put him on the roster and to put him out there on the ice, everything he said was it had to do with, you know, there's a lot of pressure. He's a young guy. He's playing on, you know, in the top six. You know, this is what you'd expect from a guy that's this young. And it's just interesting that you have players on the team like Philip Tomasino, even Elli Tolvanen, Yakov Trenin, Tanner Jeannot, that are also young guys playing in the bottom six night in and night out and are not being given the same excuses for poor performance. Not even that those guys are performing badly. Most of those guys, I'm talking into the mic from whispering.
Yeah.
Most of those guys outperformed him.
Yeah, that's a good point. Why did Cody Glass? I mean, look, the answer is probably that Cody Glass and Luke Cunningham are in very different stages of their development. Cody Glass's ceiling is much higher than Luke Cunningham's, right? He's younger, so it's like I think maybe the thinking is John Hines needs a sort of a front of the line grunt to do the kind of work that Luke Cunningham could do right now at the expense of, or in order to benefit Cody Glass down the road where he can develop all this year. Looking back, I actually think the way they've handled Cody Glass has been fine.
I don't have a problem with Cody Glass.
And he got all the time he did in Milwaukee, and he got playoff experience too. And he looks like a much better player. I think the trajectory for him is great. But I think what you're referring to is like Tomasino or Tolvanen, and I guess basically just those two, right? I mean,
you're going to say that Luke Cunningham's young and he's playing in a stressful, but there's a lot of pressure. You're putting a young guy out there in a high pressure situation, and I'm like, you're putting a 20 years old boy out there on a line with McCarron and telling him to do well on the fourth line, but you're like, we're going to sit him. We're just not getting what we need out of him. But no, Luke, please go out there and gobble up the second line and do great things for us.
Yeah, at some point I'll have to dive in to see Thomas. I want to dive in on Tomasino's season and really see kind of how did he progress? Because I feel like at times, I don't think he knew what his role was supposed to be. It seemed to me on the – well, we got plenty of time to talk about more of that. But Tomasino's role in this team didn't make a lot of sense to me as it did to you. And I think that you could see some of that. Like, was he supposed to be some sort of grinder? Like, was he supposed to be a gain the zone, get an offensive face-off, come off the ice so the top unit could come on? Or was he supposed to be some, like – was he supposed to create goals for Michael McCarron? Like, his role didn't make a lot of sense. And he got, I mean, I think he got a little bit of power play time, but like And I think at times looks pretty good, but that whole second unit on the power play was just so bad. Okay, so yeah, we've got so much time to talk about all these different players. We'll probably spend like tons of time on Forsberg. Which we will, I will mention here in a second exactly how much time we have. I didn't realize how far away we are really from all this stuff. It's just pretty sad. So here's what's coming up. We have the NFL. We have the NHL draft July 7th and July 8th. So like we have a month and a half until even the draft happens.
Lord.
And then a week after that, we have free agency starting on July 13th. So we have so much. We basically have 2 months until free agency. That's crazy. We have a lot of time to fill with that. We will talk a lot about Forsberg, what's going to happen there. We'll talk about the progression of some of these young players. I want to break down the competitive rebuild thing because I feel like they didn't do either one of those. Again, a David Poile, a knock on David Poile's track record for this year. And then the next season should start in October. So we're at the very least, we're like five
right
months
there.
From watching hockey again. And, yeah, so it's, we have a long time to wait and, you ready for it?
Ready for what? The waiting?
Yeah.
Tom Petty once said the waiting is the hardest part. I don't know if you're a big
Arcade Tom Fire Petty had a whole song about waiting. No, I'm sorry, not Arcade Fire. It was Built to Spill. Built to Spill had a song about waiting. We wait, we wait for May. That's what happened.
Well, we're gonna wait for October, apparently.
Yeah, we're waiting for October.
It's already May. May's here, man. It's come and gone.
Speaking of coming and going, one thing that is going to be going over the next few months or few weeks, whatever. So here's what we're gonna do in the off season for this show, for the On the Preds show. We are going to go to audio only for the next probably at least month. Maybe once free agency comes back, we'll go back to video then, but bottom line is, you know, there's obviously a lot less to talk about. There's a lot less to break down. Throughout this season, we've done stuff where we've shown video clips of plays and interviews with players and stuff like that. We're not going to have any of that over this summer. I mean, we're not going to break down video of anything over the next 2 months for sure. So we are going to go to audio only. So the YouTube shows will take a pause, but the audio podcast on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you're listening to this right now, will stay. So like we will record these and then it'll be uploaded still on Sundays. And you know, there's probably going to be some times where we're going to take weeks off because you know, we've got vacations and stuff. We're people too. I know I'm going on at least two out of town vacations here, over the summer, but, I think it'll really benefit. It'll really help us kind of like get out the same content, but like, you know, maybe take a little bit of a breather on the intensity of the stuff. Because during the season, Sean and I, we want to give you the best possible quality content. And some of that, sometimes that means taking the summer to like maybe come back a little bit. And then when it ramps up in October, when the new season ramps up, we're ready to go. That makes sense?
Makes sense to me. And I'll just say this, if you're watching this, number one, if you're listening to this, then you need to go straight to YouTube and bring this episode up. Number two, if you're already on YouTube watching this, you need to get a good, long look at these faces.
This is the last you'll see of us for a few weeks. Yep.
What you could do if you really wanted, and I don't mean this to hurt anyone's feelings, but if you wanted to go ahead, we'll be very still for you. You can measure my forehead and see how much longer it gets between now and then.
All right. So, having said all that, you can check out all of our hockey coverage at azsports.com. And please also go to ontheforecheck.com as well and check out everything there. Follow me on Twitter at AlexDarty1. Follow Sean on Twitter at SCSOTF. And we will see everyone next week. Well, not see you, but you will hear from us next week.